You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, my guest Bonnie is here to tell us about her little sister, Danielle Bell, who went missing in 2001, and how we can help.
Danielle Bell was last seen at a party on the night of September 30th, 2001.
I knew Friday something was not right when she did not come back, when she didn't come home, or I didn't hear from her, I mean. But by Sunday evening, I knew, and that's when I called 911.
The party in the 500 block of Cedar Tree Lane was at Robert Louis Bassett Jr.'s house, who was in his mid-20s at the time. He wasn't the only older man Danielle hung around with. Alfredo Gomez Sanchez Jr., 24 at the time of Danielle's disappearance, was in a sexual relationship with Danielle. He's now serving 30 years of prison time for sex crimes committed against Danielle, in addition to other sex charges and intimidating a witness. Just weeks before her disappearance, Susan says Danielle told her she was pregnant, and Alfredo was the father. Danielle was scheduled for a doctor's appointment the week after she went missing.
Too much evidence and things pointing to that she was murdered that night.
Last week, I sat down with Danielle's big sister, Bonnie, to learn more about her sister and what's happened so far with Danielle's investigation and the last 23 years. Bonnie has made big strides pushing her sister's case forward, and things are actively developing. To keep up with the most current updates in Danielle's case, please follow Bonnie's TikTok. I'll be adding the links to all of Bonnie's social media, and especially her TikTok, so you can all go show her some love and support and follow along her journey to get Danielle the justice she needs and bring Danielle back home to Bonnie. So let's dive right in. So welcome, Bonnie. You're here to tell us about your sister, Danielle.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Of course. So I always want to start with Danielle. So what was it like growing up with Danielle?
So Danielle was the youngest of three. There was 6 years between her and I. Danielle was outgoing, active, had lots of friends. She was a cheerleader from the time she was like five for little league football teams in the area until she went missing. But she was definitely, I've described her in the past, you know, as like a risk taker, but she was also compassionate and she liked animals. She wanted to be a veterinarian at one point, but it was always about animals. And she also, you know, had a lot of friends.
So popular, well-known.
Yeah.
Like most cheerleaders. I mean, especially in the, you know, 90s and early 2000s, that was the place to be right. Popular and well-known, right? Especially since mm-hmm. She's been doing it since she was little. My daughter did competition cheer for a little bit. Did she stay with, like, the whole team growing up or throughout her school years?
So it was, like, a little league football team. I don't know where you're located, but we were in the Southeast where football is very important way of life.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
She did that for like those kinds of teams.
Oh, that's so cool. So she probably had friends at different schools and different neighborhoods.
Yeah, she did.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's what I liked about my daughters too, was it was for a group. So she got to, you know, meet everybody all around, basically in your community. So she had friends in all different groups. That's cool.
Mm-hmm. She did.
So when it comes up to her missing, lead me up to the few weeks before she goes missing. Like, what's her life? What's her interactions? It seems like there was an older man involved in her disappearance.
So she was, it's always a matter of where I want to start at.
Yeah, wherever you want to start.
I can tell you, I like to start it from my point of view. So in about 2 weeks before she went missing, I had scheduled to have our pictures taken on the beach. And on the way back from having those taken, it was a Sunday evening, she asked me if I would stop at a convenience store so she could use a payphone. 2001, long ago, there was payphones everywhere.
Right.
So I said no, though. I told her, no, I'm going to drop you off where I got you from. And I didn't really question her about who she was, you know, trying to contact. But I told her I was taking her back to our mom's house where she lived with my mom, my grandmother, and my mom's boyfriend at the time. So when we got back, they had made dinner. I was eating dinner. Heard my sister ask my mom, can I go with Alfredo, or can they come over? I think she asked at first if he could come over, and my mom said sure. And then like 15, 20 minutes later, my sister walks in, was outside, came back in with three Hispanic males, Alfredo Sanchez, Alexander Sanchez, and Roel, both of who are related to Alfredo Sanchez, who was said to have been in a relationship with my sister, gotten her pregnant, and that is part of his motive for why I suspect him to be involved in her disappearance. Let me think about where I want to pick up. So dating around about 2 weeks, you know, about that same time frame, my mother claims that Alfredo Sanchez and her had confrontational exchange, basically, because my sister had told her that Alfredo had been having sex with her and giving her drugs, and that she thought she was pregnant with his child. And that my sister also told my mom at that point, if you you can't do anything or say anything, because he'll kill me.
My understanding is that she knew these men because of your mom, and that this is just from me reading. Were they intertwined? Is that how she met Alfredo?
My sister actually met Alfredo Sanchez through a friend of hers. So a girl that she went to middle school with was dating Roel, who is Alfredo Sanchez's cousin. And that is how my sister met them. Now, as the point of when my sister went missing, my mother was getting her drugs from Alfredo Sanchez and had been on a friendly basis with him.
Gotcha. So that's how that relationship, how they all kind of knew each other. Because was your mom comfortable with her dating this older guy? That was not a red flag to her?
So my mom told me, so the night that, you know, my sister comes back inside with those three Hispanic dudes, you know, Alfredo Sanchez being one of them, I asked my mom at that point, I said, you know, what are you doing? Who are these guys? Why is she hanging out with people that look like they're older than me? And they were 24, or at least Alfredo was 24 or 25 at the time. And then additionally, my mom was letting my sister leave with them, because after they came back inside, my sister said, you know, can we go for a ride, basically? And my mom said yes. And I questioned my mom on that and was like, why is she going out with these guys, period, but why on a school night at like 9 o'clock at night?
Yeah, that would definitely be a question. Well, and we have to look at their age. I mean, it's a major gap. It's 10 years, correct?
Yes.
That's a huge, huge gap. Did he just look much younger? Was your mom fully aware of his age, or was it not till you really had that conversation of like, hey, these guys are older?
So my mom claims that she thought that Alfredo Sanchez and my sister was just babysitting with him for him.
Oh, okay.
And that she said she knew him and he was okay.
So he had kids with someone else, married, dating, something like that. But
yes,
there were
he
other
had
children.
Kids with someone else. He had okay. kids. Yeah, he does have kids.
So what I've seen in the Charlie Project, which is fantastic. I love them. Mm-hmm. They usually are the ones that get it the closest for families. I did notice a little paragraph that I wanted to ask you about. They say that Danielle's disappearance remains classified as a runaway, but foul play is now suspected in her case. Have they ever changed it from a runaway?
Yeah, endangered missing child. No.
Great.
She was first reported as a runaway.
Okay, great. So it has been updated. Now, was she reported specifically intentionally as a runaway, or do you believe that it was classified as a runaway?
The police report has runaway on it, the original, if I'm not mistaken. I'm still trying to get my hands on it to verify that. But the very initial police report reported her as a runaway, and then it was reclassed.
Got you. And who reported her essentially missing or runaway?
So that's another thing I'm trying to nail down too. So what here's what I do. I can tell you for sure. My mom, so my sister went missing on Friday, September 28th, 2001, which was a Friday night. And my mom waited until Sunday night to call the cops.
Okay. And now was that because this would be typical behavior from Danielle?
Yes. Come to find out that that was something that my mom was allowing her to do, was stay gone for entire weekends. So whether it be at friends' houses or maybe she was at Alfredo's instead, I have no idea. But yeah. Yeah. So what was your question again? Make sure I answer it fully.
No, you're fine. I just wanted to kind of get a picture of when she was reported missing, how she was reported missing. So would your mom have called and she would have been the one that said, hey, she's run away because she's not home? You know, it sounds like as long as she was home Monday for school, it was all good.
That's what it sounds like to me as well. But what I can tell you is that she reported her. My mom was the one that they interviewed for the initial police report. I was told by my grandmother, who was there with my mom that night, that the report was made, that she had to talk my mom into making the report. I don't know who called the police originally, but I know that the report was my mom. And so I guess essentially to answer your question, she reported her missing,
gotcha,
according to my mom. She never reported her as a runaway. Now, the police classified it as a runaway. I see what you're saying now. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're good. Okay, so your mom never had any belief that she would have left her life for any reason?
No.
Okay, so at some point, the police, because of her age, probably classified her as a runaway in early 2000s. You know, that's what we expect. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, but she didn't have any belongings taken with her, just what she was wearing that night.
And she was at a party the last time she was seen, correct?
Correct. So on Friday, September 28th, 2001, my mom said that she and my sister got into an argument and that it was about my sister wanting to leave the house and my mom didn't want her to. And then she told me that they got into this argument. Then my mom later left and went to my brother's football game, which nobody's ever been able to corroborate that story that they saw her there.
Interesting.
Yeah. Just a little known fact. I haven't been able to really link that to anything directly, but I think it's worth noting, you know.
Definitely.
After my mom said, after she left, my sister went to a party in a park about 2 miles north of where she was living at the time with some neighborhood kids. And it was it's called Harvesters Community Park, and it's literally a block over from Alfredo Sanchez's house. At that party, my sister was seen getting into a Lincoln Town car around 10 p.m. with Alexander Sanchez, who is Alfredo Sanchez's little brother.
Do we know who owned the Lincoln Town car?
Alexander Sanchez.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I'm sure they spoke to people at the party. Maybe they didn't. I guess I shouldn't assume, especially if they classified her as a runaway. Were they able to actually speak it to people at that party that night?
The police?
Yes. Sorry. Should have clarified that.
Yes. The police did ask witnesses from that party if they saw her, and they did point that she was there.
And have any of their stories changed, or have they remembered anything? Has anybody new come forward since then that was at that party?
No, not at that party directly. There was something in with Alfredo Sanchez's alibi for that evening, but what happened after the party we can verify is that she went from there at Harvester's Community Park in Cantonment, Florida, to 588 Cedar Tree Lane in Molino, Florida, with Alexander Sanchez, Alfredo Sanchez's brother, to the home of Robert Bassett, who is Alfredo Sanchez's best friend, and there was a second party. And my sister hasn't been seen since then.
Were they able to interview people at that second party where they can confirm where she was and maybe kind of track down her last sightings?
So she was seen at that party by witnesses who stated that she was heavily intoxicated. Robert Bassett, who, you know, that was his house, his party, at first said that my sister left with a girl named Stacy and a guy named Kevin, who those two have said that no, she did not leave with them. They had left her at Robert's because she didn't want to leave with them. And they left sometime between 11 and p.m. and 1 a.m.
Makes sense. It's hard to get a solid window when people are drinking and partying. Definitely hard to get a solid window.
Yeah.
It seems like she was dating Alfredo, or at least interested in him. They had something going on. Did he show any signs of physical violence towards her during that relationship? Did she reach out and speak to you? Did your mom notice anything? Did her friends notice anything?
So there were about 10 to 12 people that stated that they saw my sister involved with Alfredo Sanchez, whether that be them having sex in the next room or them, you know, like cuddling or holding hands or kissing. And Alfredo Sanchez is currently in jail for lewd and lascivious behavior against two minors, one of those being my sister.
Wow. So they already had proof of that. And yet they can't seem to make a full connection to her disappearance. There seems to be a break there.
Right. There is.
Gotcha. Do you feel like investigators that you have right now, I'm sure it has changed hands in the 20 plus years that it's been out there, but do you feel like investigators are doing everything within their power to help find her?
So currently I'm working with the Escambia County Sheriff's Office to get information. So let me back up. I want to kind of tell the full story here. So back in 2005, the first few years that my sister went missing, not a whole lot was done. And then we got this really cool detective named Mark Schmeister back in 2005 that really worked hard on her case and helped us, you know, weed through rumors and what was fact and what wasn't, and also helped, you know, put together the evidence to try and charge and try and sentence Alfredo Sanchez for lewd and lascivious behavior. So it kind of died off back in 2012. The Escambia County Sheriff's Office has stated that they didn't even have my sister's case. They don't have it on their cold case website until just recently. I reached back out to them and applied a little bit of a pressure, and they have are working to get it, you know, her case back on the website, and they've put together a plan for a 90-day review of her case,
which is excellent. That's what we want to hear. Like you. We understand that investigators can't always, you know, be responsible for previous ones dropping the ball, but stepping in and saying, hey, we did drop the ball, let's get this going, and being hopeful for these next 90 days. Because again, you do have to just hope that they actually said what they were going to do and meant that they were going to do it when they said it to your face.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I'm going to keep going. And you know, they had gave me deadlines, like the first of which is this upcoming Tuesday. What's today? Friday? Yeah, in like a week from now, they're supposed to have either given me access to the 911 call, an original police report, or coming back and saying they can't give it to me for one reason, but a response, basically. for a public records act request.
Basically, I want this record. Tell me if I can or can't have it and why.
Right.
Which is a fair ask. Total fair ask.
Right. And we may have issues if they don't give it to
me. Yeah, no, that's completely fair at this point. I mean, either usually they'll say, well, it's because it's under investigation and that's why we can't do that. Well, okay, well, we're 20 plus years in. At some point, you've had the information and you haven't done what you needed to do with it. Now it needs to be released. So maybe we can get something accomplished.
Yeah. I mean, like I've asked them many times, can you describe what an active investigation means? Can you, you know, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I've never thought about it that way. Is, you know, I think a lot of family members say, well, what are you doing? But I think that's a better way to phrase it. What in your terms, investigator, is an active investigation? What does that mean to you? Because to me, I'm sitting here 20 plus years and nothing's being done. So it doesn't feel very active to me.
Right.
It's a hard road.
It's not a fun road, you know? It's really not, especially when you know we're supposed to be able to have expectations of them that they will do what they say they're going to do. And if they don't, you know, it's not damaging just to one person. It's damaging to a missing child and a family.
Right. Absolutely. Because now you've gone all these years without your sister, who should be, how old would she be right now?
37 in July.
37 in July. Could have had a whole life in front of her.
Yeah.
That they're accountable for finding out why she's not here. And I know in the bottom of, you know, the Charlie Project and some news articles, it says, oh, well, she might be here. She might be here. You know, she could have left here or may still be in the same area. Do you have any beliefs that she is in the same area or decided to just walk away and start somewhere new?
No, I believe that she was murdered that night on Friday, September 28th at Robert Bassett's house and then buried somewhere or dumped in a body of water.
And I don't know much about Florida outside of, but, you know, from what I've seen and understood, I've never traveled there myself. But from what I understand, there's lots of ground to cover when you're looking for a missing person, especially if you're looking at recovery.
Yeah, I mean, in that area, there's a mix, you know, it's on the Gulf Coast. So I don't know if you know where Pensacola, Florida or Mobile, Alabama
is. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so Pensacola is about 30 minutes from Alabama. It's right on the Alabama-Florida line in the very northwest panhandle. It's very swampy. In some areas, there's bays, there's rivers, there's a whole ocean. You know, there's very rural areas up in the northern part of the county. So there's many spaces and places to bury someone. I want to know where she's at.
Right. At the very least, bring her home and start from there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It sounds like she was in two different towns. So she was in a party. It sounds like she started at the party in one town, then went to another town. Maybe it's kind of like my area where it's real small and they're all really close.
Yeah. The first party was about 2 miles north of her home. And then, you know, I want to say it's like 3 to 4 more miles north. So if you're looking at the map of the little panhandle area along Highway 29, which runs right through the center, goes all the way up to the northern part of the county. That's the main roads that was the road she would have traveled to get back and forth to all of those places.
Gotcha. Yeah, the more I'm listening to you describe it, it sounds exactly like where I live. It's marshy. We have farmland. We have ocean. We have bayfront. We have, you know, the cattails and the marshes. So it's just and just a bunch of little towns all interconnected. And we can be in and out of different counties. And I was going to ask, is she in the same county at the party she was last seen at versus the one she left?
Yes, the same county. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're not fighting this. She went missing from this county and supposedly something. Okay, that's good. That's what I was wondering because our county lines are real. Like our counties are tiny and you can go through like three. And so I was like, oh, man, I hope she's not fighting two different counties. Okay, cool. So she's at least in the same county. Good. Okay. Makes it a little bit easier. Mm-hmm. Now, as listeners and the public, what can we do to help you bring Danielle home?
So right now, I am just trying to get the word out about her case. I'm trying to get on every podcast I can and anyone who wants to hear me, really. So you can follow Missing Child Danielle Bell on Facebook. I'm active on TikTok under a lesbian calling out grapes.
Love that name, by the way.
I mean, that's kind of what I do. But I mean, I use that platform to really push Danielle's story because I've had so much success. Just started getting behind the camera and was like, oh, people are actually interested. And, you know, I'm not the only one that thinks this whole thing is crazy.
Right. So, I mean, it's this amazing validation, but then you also have all these other people that are looking at their own justice system. And finally, you know, I always say that people are so far removed from your world, missing and murdered, runaways, things like that, because they're not in it. It's not at their front doorstep. They might not know somebody that's in it. And so it's far, so far removed. But I think we're seeing this movement behind missing and murdered and runaway children and all these things on TikTok, simply due to the fact that even the everyday person is starting to feel failed by their justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're able to rally behind and say, no, like, wait, maybe we've been failing this whole time. When we look at cases that are over 20 years old, we're going, wait, maybe we didn't just start failing. Maybe we've been failing the whole time. And we kind of all want this, like, a little bit of vigilante justice back. So we're all willing to jump behind, build an army, and make those phone calls, do those emails. You know, we're seeing more successful with families that hold vigils. We're seeing more people show up on the streets with their feet for them. And it's a great moment to be in it. And TikTok is one of the best tools to engage in it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%. I mean, right now we're watching, you know, the campus protests happen, and it's wild how it works. But TikTok's been successful for me, and that's where I enjoy it the most.
I'm glad that it's working. I don't go on Facebook because I get so overwhelmed by the misinformation, I think, you know, mm-hmm. or, you know, I still have friends that I've had forever on their family or whatever. And you scroll like three down and it's the whole, like, I'm going through something, pray for me, but I can't tell you. And you're like, okay, moving on. Like, you know, and you just feel so overwhelmed. Yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know why you're here.
Exactly.
Like, you didn't need to share that little thing. Like, I just don't have, or like, you know, I don't know if you see my post, but copy and paste and tell me one thing about, you know, I just, not today. It's just so much, and, you know, yeah. It doesn't feel genuine anymore. It just feels so removed. But I do know that families do have a lot of success on Facebook, kind of building that army as well. Do you find Facebook is a really great tool as well, at least in your sister's case?
You know, on her page, yes. And then, you know, I've got some people that have come over from TikTok to my sister's page on Facebook, making it more active. You know, I appreciate, so I kind of try to post the important stuff on.
I do think that Facebook, at least when it came along, I mean, we saw it with Mara Murray. That was the first case on Facebook, and it became this incredible tool. I just feel like we lost the genuine power behind it there. So I avoid it like the plague, but I'm definitely going to share the Facebook because I know it is absolutely helpful. And I always have to go on and look at stuff on there, even though I die a little every time. But that's okay. Yeah. It's better than Twitter, too, is turned into a total mess. I don't know if you utilize Twitter, but that one's,
you know, right. I have never used Twitter. I mean, I may have signed up for an account, but just, like, never used it. But I don't, no.
No, no, one dumpster fire is enough. You don't want to add two.
Right. Like, I know I should be on Instagram more, too, but I'm not on there. Not because I don't like it. It's just, TikTok is, I don't know. I just hopped on TikTok and it made sense for me, I guess.
Yeah, I think TikTok makes so much more sense to millennials and Gen Z and Gen X because it's just authentic. Like, you can jump on and you can be yourself and feel like you're talking directly to someone and to people. And you don't have to have all these lights and all this production. You can just say, oh, I have this thought, and you can jump on and you can spill it out into the world and find other people that are willing to work with you to make things happen.
Yeah. I mean, I've met some really cool people on TikTok, you know, so from true crime creators to friends. So it's been a good place for me.
Well, and I'm glad to see that as families, you guys are able to connect on TikTok.
Let me tell you, the first time I saw someone, like the first time I saw, I think it was Sarah Turney. The first time I saw somebody, I was like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, this person's going viral, you know, and I didn't feel like anybody was listening to me. And then I was like, a light bulb switch when I met Nikki Wasilini. I don't want to mess up her last name.
Wasilishin. A lot of people do.
Sorry, Nikki.
No, she totally gets it. Me and her, the first time we met, I was like, all right, break it down for me so I do not do this. And she was like, I've been doing it since I was a kid. I got you. So she totally gets it.
Yeah, but I was like, how did you do it, you know? And she said, I just started reaching out to a bunch of podcasts. And I was like, genius idea. I should do that too, you know? Like, so, I mean, I think sometimes it's just, it's nice when you meet other people. They're able to validate you. And you don't, you know, when you already come from a pretty, you know, rough childhood background, all of this trauma on top of each other, you know, the validation kind of is helpful to keep moving me forward in a lot of ways. Because, you know, I have family members that would just rather this be gone and done, you know, because they just don't want to deal with it emotionally. And I can understand that, but, you know, it's a whole thing.
Right. It's still, someone has to be held accountable and there has to be answers. And her life and her story mattered. I mean, it was stolen from her. It matters what happened. It matters that the people that had any part in it are held accountable. And it matters that you can bring her home and know where she's at. And I don't say closure, I hate that, but begin to like heal and find peace and move forward. Because like you said, a lot of these families are in this right now. They have a missing or a murdered person. The family dynamics are a total trauma base right there because, yeah, some of them shut down and they don't want to deal with it. They can't deal with it. And it kind of leaves, there's so many families where there's like one advocate that's had to pull themselves out of the trauma of it all, and who also got harmed when their loved one went missing, as far as, you know, some people's mothers were completely incapable of now taking care of them. Some people's fathers were incapable of moving on and taking care of them. I mean, it crushes lives.
Yeah. I mean, you would look at it. I watched that the first time I remember that, like realizing that was the Natalie Holloway's parents, you know. Beth was just so, you know, her dad did a great job too, but when he was done, he was done. And who can blame him, you know? But Beth just kept pushing forward.
Right.
And it's a resulted in their divorce.
Right. Because there's going to be resentment. There's going to be hurt. I mean, especially, you know, someone's child. So that's what I was going to ask. How is your mom dealing with all of this? And are you the advocate for your family?
Okay, so my mom is no longer here. My mom passed away in October of 2020.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. But yeah, I mean, my stepdad, my sister's dad, wasn't too big on doing interviews, I would say. He took it really hard. And I would say that now I am my sister's advocate, and I always have been in a lot of ways.
Right. Well, and it sounds like you were her advocate even when she was still at the home, kind of coming in and being like, this is where I have to step in as a parent, because I know it seems like there are times where your mom couldn't parent, and that's where you would step in and say, hey, maybe this isn't a good idea. Maybe this shouldn't be happening. So right. It seems like you've always been her protector and advocate throughout life.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, I feel like I, you know, have had to be. My mom was a drug addict. I don't know how much you know about this side of the story, but I found out in 2019 that my mom was a prostitute, which matched witness statements and case files. from the investigations that happened back in 2005 that my mom was pimping my sister out for drugs. And so ultimately, that's what I believe she was doing and what led to the relationship with her and Alfredo. I think that my mom was getting free drugs from Alfredo Sanchez in exchange for sex with my sister.
And your sister was young and naive and fit right into what was working for your mom.
Correct.
And your stepdad, her dad, where were they in this picture?
So at that time, my stepdad and my mom had been divorced. And so my sister was just living with my mom, or under my mom's care mainly, and with my grandmother, my mom's boyfriend. And my dad was only seeing my sister like every other weekend. And I think my sister tried to get out of those a lot too.
Oh, okay, because I was going to ask, did they seem to have a good relationship?
I can't speak to what the relationship was like between my sister and my dad, because I had already been out of the house for 6 years. I know that I had a negative relationship for most of my life with him. I don't know that that was her experience, and I don't want to speak on that for her.
Right. Well, and I understand the gap. Me and my youngest brother were 12 years apart. And so, yeah, different, totally different grow up experiences. I had his dad and my mom, I had them married, and he remembered them always divorced. So when they're in the same room, he'll call me and he'd be like, I don't know what to do with this. Come handle this. this isn't the life I had. And I was like, oh yeah, I had two of them in the same room, and trust me, I'll be right there. Like, because that's our job. Yeah. And but I don't think people understand when there's that major gap, it's almost like they grow up as only children.
Yeah. We have a brother, my sister and I do, that was in between us. And they were 2 years apart. So 4 and 6 years younger than me.
And that's the thing too. Yeah. Well, and you got to live in all of this. You know, every dumpster fire, and still, you know, try to heal from your sister missing. And you can't do that without answers. And try to hold the people that should be holding the people accountable. It's like,
yeah,
so much work. And it seemed like when I saw your TikTok, and I'll insert that if you're okay with it, about coming back from your trip from Florida and talking to investigators, it seemed like in that moment, you had some really good hope. Do you feel like that, you know, now that you've kind of had time to come home, sat back and look at everything, do you still feel that hope?
Yeah, I'm still hopeful for sure. I'm always going to have some skepticism and some, you know, wait and see what happens kind of approach with any law enforcement agency.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like I said earlier, I hope that they, you know, they are going to meet the deadlines and do the full review and get me the public records request that I've asked for. And other than that, I'm hopeful and I'm happy because I'm using this as momentum, you know, to keep pushing her story, because my goal is to go national. That is ultimately my goal for her case, because I don't feel like I'll get the results that I need to get until that happens.
Right. Until you build that, until they know, hey, I've got this army. And like Nikki said, you know, one day for her, everybody's got their thing. For Sarah, she got on TikTok and it just clicked, right? I mean, not that she hadn't worked for years before that, because we know, but TikTok was that click for her. And then Nikki's click was, I'm going to get on every podcast and then I'm going to come to investigators and be like, here is my portfolio. Here's my book of every time I'm telling this story, because the littlest podcast to the biggest one, doesn't matter the platform, it's another set of ears or eyes on your sister's face, which not only can it bring it national, but maybe there's someone that saw something that didn't know they saw something. That happens in cases and we don't talk about it. They didn't know that they saw something important because they didn't even know that person was missing or harmed or that they had seen them.
Yeah. I mean, there's that as well. You know, my thing is I think that ultimately based on people that I've talked to that are way smarter than me, that have worked in police work, that have done detective work, the case is close to being solved. We just need either an admission or a body. with evidence attached to it.
Wow. So you have a puzzle piece. It's just like a little puzzle piece that you need.
Yeah. And wow. So part of my hope is that the Escambia County Sheriff's Office uses, you know, other agencies to maybe help break Alfredo Sanchez or Robert Bassett down.
Right, because they're the ones that know and can say something, and or they're the only ones that can defend their name, right? And, yeah. You know, if most people for being accused of something, we're going to find the piece that proves that we're innocent. You know, and it seems like Alfredo's locked up right now, serving time, correct?
Yeah.
And do you think he has any motivation to come forward?
No. I think he got off with murder. I think he's only been punished for being a rapist.
Right. And they were able to connect that through these interviews.
Yeah.
Yet they can't charge him for her disappearance through these same interviews. So what piece do we need to get them? Do they need to get? I mean, they don't have to have a confession. I mean, of course, we don't know because like you said, you can't get the case files right now. Nobody's told you why you can't have them. So we don't know that piece. Like you're able to prove that they had a relationship that was wildly inappropriate. Why wouldn't you then be able to go to a grand jury and say, we can prove this wildly inappropriate relationship. She was with him. He is already capable of doing things not appropriately. Why can't we move forward with charging him?
You know, I think that's possible. But I think it's going to be really difficult. I think any good attorney would tell you that you need a body. Because here's the thing. You know, if he was charged with something like that now and we didn't have a body, it would be harder to prove, as we saw with Alyssa Turney, her case, right?
Right.
Without a body. And then you do find a body, you know, later you can't retry them.
Right. It depends, of course, on whether they tried him for second degree, first degree, you know.
Right. I mean,
your little loopholes. But yeah, it is. Yeah. I mean, you are taking a risk on double jeopardy. Absolutely. And Arizona, Alyssa's case drives me nuts because Arizona is one of the prime states that have prosecuted no body cases in one. That was absolutely a failure of the state. I'll say it. I don't care. You know, I adore Sarah and I have loved Alyssa's case and, you know, it's meant so much to so many of us. And so to see them come out and fail her, like the state failed her, obviously, you know, they were horrible. I do believe in no body cases, but I don't know of any no body cases that have been successfully prosecuted in Florida. And we do have to look per state is, I don't know, like you said, I'm kind of with you on that one. I don't know with Florida, if you don't have a body or a confession, if you can move forward.
I don't know either. And that's something that would be, you know, a good question to ask, I think, once the review is done again and start asking those kinds of questions. Will I take it to that level? Yes, absolutely, if I have to.
Right, absolutely. I mean, the greatest thing I think even that came out of Alyssa's case is being able to say, and we all know. Like, you know what the court system can say, whatever, you can say it until you're blue in the face. Well, we all know. And we all know the truth because her sister came out there and pounded the streets. And in the end of the day, you're doing the same for Danielle. You're out there telling her truth no matter what. And everybody's family, you know, their piece looks different. But what's your piece moving forward? Where do you feel like Danielle will be at rest and you can move forward? What's that piece that you need? Do you need to see them in court? Do you need to see them held responsible? Do you need them to admit it? What piece do you need?
I need a body. I want my sister's body recovered.
Absolutely.
That is the number one thing I want. You know, there's even times where I'm like, I want to know where her body is and what happened more than I want anything else. I want people to know who she was and what her story was. I want people to think about what it's like, you know, the kids that didn't have a chance, the kids that didn't get a chance because they came from fucked up homes and no one was looking out for them at the end of the day.
Right. Like her innocence was stolen way before.
Right.
She didn't have she was set up to be a statistic in the system.
Correct.
Yeah. There's a lot of kids that are really lucky to get out of the system, you know, should have been a statistic, come from this already, you know, broken home or domestic violence home. I mean, there's so many. We don't have lots of great homes in this country. And I think a lot of millennial kids grew up real hard. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us weren't protected. And you're right. She didn't have a chance from the start. And the fact that you're telling her story is, I think, is healing so many people. I always say a lot of us just turned 18 and aged out safely.
Right.
That's what happened to a lot of us kids is we turned 18 and we aged out safely. And I think the reason I do a lot of this, too, is because I have a lot of survivor guilt with that. And I'm sure just walking around as her sister, you carry that almost survivor guilt.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I've done lots of years of therapy for sure. It's a continuous process.
Yes. Got to pick it up, drop it, pick it up, drop it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I just recently started doing that again. So that's always helpful to me. I usually really do well with therapy, but according to my friend, I have to stop intellectualizing it anyway. So
same, been there where they're like, oh, that's great. So feel it. And I'm like, no, don't
you want me
do
to do
part.
What right? Like, no.
Like, if we were taught how to feel things, we wouldn't be here. Okay, so right? Like, just give up on that, because after 30, if I didn't feel it, old dog, new tricks, no. Like,
totally,
you know, just be happy I can intellectualize it. I can see it's wrong and I shouldn't do these things. Doesn't mean it's going to change. Like, you know, I pay you to tell me I'm good. Like, that's all we're here for.
I need that. I need that validation. Right?
Just tell me it's okay that I'm crazy. You know that I know that I'm crazy. And then we'll move on and we'll be okay. And then I'll come here every week and bitch about things that are bothering me. You're going to make me feel better because that's why I pay you, and stop calling me out of my shit because I don't like it.
Yeah, I don't like this at all.
Right? Like, how does that make you feel? I don't know. Do you have a book? Like, you know, at the ER where they let you, you know, pick the smiley face. Like, can I tell you in which smiley face code I'm in?
I would love to be able to describe my feelings like that. Oh, my God. Every day, if someone just asks me how I am, I'm just going to put up, like, the face.
Yeah, it's like, you just need the, like... I think there's like a basic 7 faces on that chart, and you just point to it and be like, we're right around here, maybe in the middle, but that's all I got for you. Because if you ask me to describe this feeling one more time, I'm going to lose it. Yeah.
You know totally it. You know it.
Like, oh, my goodness. Well, you know, you're doing a huge part of that. You know, one of your biggest things that you said you wanted was people to know her story and know her face. And I mean, you're doing an amazing job at making sure that people know who she is, and you're still being, you know, the protective sister, making sure that people know her name and her face. So you should be really proud of yourself for that, because that's not an easy job.
No, thank you so much, Erin. I appreciate that. And yeah, I'm going to keep trying, and I'm going to keep doing that, and maybe upload to Instagram more.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'm under Justice. See, that's another thing. I have like 3 different handles. I need to like... get it all together. I'm under Justice for the Missing on Insta and YouTube.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'll link those. If I can't find them, I'll just reach out to you. But I'm sure I'll be able to find them. Usually I try to find everything first and then reach out to you guys when I can't find anything. And we'll make sure we add those links. Any other pages or sites or things that you'd want visitors? Is there a petition? Anything?
Yes. Yes. I have a link in the petition for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office to move the jurisdiction of the case to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. I'm still garnering signatures on that. I'm just as a backing for the future. I know they're on this 90-day thing, but I'm just preparing myself.
Right, as you should, right? It doesn't hurt for people to go and sign it and it be a tool to sit there and be ready in case you need it. I think that's a great idea. So we'll shift everyone over there. And make sure that they're signing. Make sure you share your TikTok. Get the Facebook up there. We get the Instagram up there. And Nikki just started using Instagram too. Like she was like, we've all been like, come on, Nikki, do it. So she finally did it during this last, you know, live with Sarah. You know, we all were like, come on. So she's been on there, and it's starting, you know, the wheels are starting to turn. Instagram is a little slower with that whole process, and you do have to get, you know, get on there. And usually I just share all the stuff I made on TikTok, to be honest.
That's what I'm kind of thinking. Like, I could just do that. Why not?
Yeah, it's just saying another platform, you know. And Instagram, it has its like real popular peaks and it goes down and it has its real popular. It's a weird one, but at least it's a constant.
Okay. Fair.
Yeah, I think you'd like it. I think you'd like it over there. Maybe. We'll see. Let me know. So. It's better than Facebook. I can promise you that.
Anything's better than Facebook.
Oh God. Isn't that the truth? Thank you so much for taking the time to learn about Danielle's case. It is so important. Thanks to Bonnie's persistence, she did receive the initial police report, and I will attach that in the show notes so that you can find it and read it. She did put out two updates. Today is May 8th, and I am going to give you those two updates leading up to today when I am recording the final end of this episode. I'm going to go ahead and read the police report to you, but it will also be attached. In the very beginning of my episode, you heard a woman's voice breaking down Danielle's case, and that was Danielle's mother, Susan. This initial police report is dated as the approval date, April 9th, 2002. The police report reads as follows. Miss Bell reported her daughter Danielle went to a party in the cantonment area on Friday night. She never returned home. Miss Bell said Danielle wanted to spend the night with a friend named Jennifer. When Danielle did not arrive home, Susan assumed that she went and stayed with Jennifer anyway. However, Sunday evening, she began calling around looking for Danielle. However, did not locate her. Miss Bell provided some names to me. I made contact with a subject known as Alex Sanchez. Alex told me that there was a party Friday night in the village area on the corner of Escambia and Lakeview Avenue in the park. He said that Danielle left there on foot around 21:30 hours. He did advise that Danielle and her mother were having problems, and he said Danielle told him that she was not going home. I left a phone number for Alex to contact me by should he receive information about Danielle's whereabouts. While I was working this call, I heard Resource Officer Daryl Singleton come up on the radio at approximately 01:30 hours, this date. I immediately paged him to contact me. When he called me, I explained to him that Danielle Bell was missing. He advised me he did not have personal knowledge of this child. However, he took Miss Bell's name and home telephone number and advised me to tell her that he would arrive at school this a.m. around 08:30 hours. And he will begin to check around and see if Danielle is in school and then contact her mother. I then went to the cantonment area and drove around in the park and the neighborhood. However, I did not observe any unusual activities. I did not observe any juveniles out on the street. And then I contacted dispatcher number 845 and provided her the necessary information for logging in. At this time, I have no further information. I provided the complaint number to Miss Bell. On May 7th, after receiving the police report, Bonnie did a TikTok asking a few questions. Why did her mother wait 2 days to call the police? While in the report, it states that Susan thought that Danielle stayed with a friend, but Susan would later say that Danielle was on restriction. And she was on restriction due to the fact that she had been in a relationship with a 24-year-old man. But what's always struck Bonnie as odd is if Danielle was grounded, then why did her mother wait 2 days to report her missing? Why wasn't she out looking for her that very day? While Bonnie very much believes that this 24-year-old man was responsible in the death of her sister, she does think that her mother might have known more about what happened to Danielle and now has taken those secrets to the grave with her. I will be linking this TikTok and I encourage you to go watch it because it is much deeper than I can explain. Bonnie also shared another video on an update about when she will be on the next live to talk about her sister's case and about the struggles of dealing with the emotional wear of telling this story again and again to get her sister's name out. I will be posting that audio for you now.
I have committed to tracking the progress of my missing sister's case on TikTok, and along with that, I am committed to tracking my responses, my reactions, and impacts that it's having on me. I have not slept very well for almost a week. I'm not eating, and I am extremely stressed out and burned out. So I'm going to turn this app off and turn it back on Friday at 6 p.m. Mountain, 8 p.m. Eastern to do a live with F That Pod. But until then, I have just finished a therapy session, and it is very apparent to me that I am on the verge of losing it. And so I'm shutting this app down for me for a couple of days. But I will be back on Friday. I apparently need to go stick my face in cold water and make sure I work out before I meditate, and try not to develop ulcers, I guess. So I will see you Friday evening.
Again, I want to thank you so much for listening to Danielle's story. And please go and show Bonnie some love and support if you're available this Friday to join the live. And please go follow her TikTok and other social medias that I will have attached. And please keep sharing Danielle's story. And don't forget, every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.